Schade!
Schade.
Schade. Schade.
I'm the doctor, by the way.
You're listening to Pieces of Eight, the Doctor Who podcast that's not been lying incomplete since 1979. We're on the trail, as ever, of those sections of the Doctor Who universe that feature the incarnation of the Time Lord as played by Paul McGann. I'm Kenny Smith, and today, while Becca's still off on maternity leave, I'm joined by everyone's favourite Belgian, it's Tina Peters. Hello, Tina!
Hi! Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's fantastic, given that you've always been one of our biggest supporters and always say lovely things about us. And it's just nice to ask you and come on and join us as a co-host this week.
I mean, I love being a co-host. It's going to be fun.
It is. And because you love this Doctor so much.
Yeah, I mean, I do.
Quick chat about, again, just to remind listeners how you became a fan of the Eighth Doctor.
I became a fan during lockdown. I saw the tweet along that Big Finish was doing, and I was like, this sounds interesting. And you could download Chimes of Midnight for free, so I did. And I listened to it, and I fell head over heels in love with the Eighth Doctor. Just from hearing his voice, I'm like, I love this Doctor. The story was so good, and he was so energetic, and the chemistry with Charlie, it was just amazing. So I'm like, I like this Doctor.
And I'm so glad that you did. And of course, you've listened to just about everything that he's been in. I know you've recently got some of the short trips as well. So
I have.
You'll be able to listen to them. And of course, as we speak, we're just a week away from you having met Paul McGann in the UK.
Yes, I did. I saw him at Wales Comic Con Telfer Takeover. I've been told I have to say Telfer Takeover. So yeah, oh, he's so amazing. I love meeting him. Also, I love that he knows me by now. So I'm like, yay, he knows me.
How many times have you met him now?
Good question. This was the fifth time, I think.
Yeah.
If we're counting video calls as well, because I did a few of them under like during lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, five or six times, I think, something like that.
And the other thing that I have to mention is that you have the very best Eighth Doctor cosplays, all of his outfits.
Thank you. Not the comic book one, but except for the comic book ones, I have them all. I've got the movie, I've got Night of the Doctor, and, well, Power of the Doctor, and the Dark Eyes look as well.
And do you have the Sonic?
I do. I've got both of them. And I'm waiting to buy the metallic Sonic one from the movie as well. So.
Oh, I think it's probably fair to say that you are a super fan of the Eighth Doctor.
I mean, people have been told me, like, I'm the biggest Belgian fan, let's say it like that, because I assume there will be bigger fans as me in the UK, so I'm the biggest Belgian fan.
Absolutely, I will agree with that, because
we don't
want to fall out as to who is the biggest fan of the Eighth Doctor.
No, there will be fans who are bigger fans as me, I have no doubt of this.
And a bigger fan than I as well, but hey, we just enjoy it. We're not in it to see who's the biggest and who's the best, we just want to have fun.
Exactly. Yes.
That's the best part about it.
Yep.
So, shall we go on and chat about today's exciting adventure in time and space?
Yes, we shall. You join us as we resume our quest to future the Eighth Doctor's exploits, whether on screen, in books, novellas, full cast audios, short stories, comics, animations, talking books, magazines, and more. This week, we're taking a look at Chada, the incomplete Doctor Who story that's been completed at least 9 times, first as a video with text by Ian Levine, then the BBC video version, as a hardbook novelization, a paperback novelization, as a shortened paperback novelization, as an unofficial animation with original cast members minus Tom Baker, as an animation with original cast members in Hulu Lincoln Baker, as an animation with Paul McGann in the lead role, and also as an audio CD with Paul McGann in the lead role using the animation soundtrack By and Large.
You did very well. Did you just make that all up off the top of your head?
No, I'm following the script. let's just No, I did. I made all of this up just on the top of my head. I knew this by heart. So yeah, and that's not even mentioning it being reused by author Douglas Adams for his novel part of Dick's Gently Holistic Detective Agency as well.
Yeah, and of course, listeners, if you know of any other versions that we've missed out, please do let us know on Twitter at Pieces of Eighth. So yes, I've been a big fan of Shada for a number of years. However, Tina, do you have a reading voice all ready to go?
Not as good one as Becca's, but I shall try my best.
Can you tell us what the Big Finish website has to tell us about Shada?
I can. It says, let's try this as good as Becca. The Doctor has a spot of unfinished business. Reunited with his old friends Romana and K-9, he answers a summons from Professor Chronotis, a retired Time Lord now living in the academic life in a Cambridge college. But the Doctor isn't the only visitor to Cambridge. Somewhere in the city, a sinister alien, Skagra, who is intent on stealing an ancient and mysterious book brought to Earth by Professor many years ago. What is Skagra's diabolical plaster plan? And who or what is the mysterious Shada? To discover the truth, the Doctor and his friends must embark on a perilous journey that will take him from the cloisters of Cambridge to the farthest reaches of deep space, risking deadly encounters with a sentient spaceship, the monstrous Kroggs, and the ancient Time Lord criminal cult Salyevin. As the Doctor soon discovers, the fate of the universe hangs in the balance. There is also an additional note in the end saying, this production is an extended, audio-only version of the animated serial that was originally broadcast on the cult pages of the BBC website.
Oh, well done. You did that very well.
I try.
You did very well. So, why don't we hear the BBC iTrailer originally released to promote Shada?
Beware the sphere. Beware Skagra. Beware Shada.
Come on, Romana. Come on, K-9. We've got to go back. Back to Cambridge, 1979.
Ah, Doctor, how splendid to see you.
You too, Professor. This is Romana.
Ship. Welcome home, my lord.
My ship, tell me of the one called the Doctor.
You brought a book from Gallifrey to Cambridge.
Yes, just a few knick-knacks, you know, and you know how I love my books, Doctor.
It's the book itself. It's atomically unstable. It seems to be absorbing radioactivity.
A book's doing that?
Yes. I think it's very, very dangerous. We must find the Professor.
Do you know him?
Hardly at all. He just lent me a book.
A book? We've been looking for a book.
It is a very dangerous book, and I have been very careless with it. It is the key to Shada.
It would help if we knew who Shada was.
Who or what?
How naive, Doctor. How pathetically limited your vision.
Limited?
Take over the universe. Oh, how childish.
Welcome back to your ship, my lord.
What is that?
Estimated arrival of life form in this command area in 21 seconds and counting.
What? K-9, why on earth didn't you try and tell me sooner? Doctor, look out!
For a dead man, Doctor, you are extremely ingenious.
Kenny, are you a Douglas Adams fan?
I definitely am. I remember watching City of Death in 1979 when I was like 5 years old. And I didn't know at the time that he had written it, but I knew of it. And I remember watching Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when they did the TV version with a very young Peter Davison in it, and playing the Dish of the Days like a space cow. And there was something about it that made me laugh a lot. And I later was introduced to the books of Hitchhiker's Guide, and then I later discovered Douglas Adams' other work, and as you mentioned, Dirk Gently. And it was amazing just to discover just such a funny writer, just doing silly science fiction things, and just, it was just craziness. I really enjoyed it. And is Douglas somebody that's big in Belgium?
No, but to be fair, I don't know so many people from the Doctor Who world that are famous in Belgium to begin with, unless like the really big names like David Tennant and stuff, because Belgians will go mental. But it's not that popular, but it's changing. So hopefully someday they all will be famous.
Absolutely. And did you enjoy Shada?
Oh, I did. I just loved the absurdity of the script, that they just get repeating each other. And the like, especially the part where, oh, you made my, what was it called again? My spectrometer blow up. I loved that part. I was just laughing out loud the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, there's silly jokes like B, 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 C. And just
yeah,
silly things like that, which were in the original, and they kept them for the audio-only version. I mean, I think that it's a really good cast there. I think I really like Chris Parsons, not just because he's Scottish, and but of course a Harry Potter star as well, of course.
Yeah, I mean, being a fan of the Scottish as well, so I just love when you hear that in BBC audios or Big Finish audios or just audios in general, because I love the accents. So I'm like, yay, Scottish or Irish or British, basically just a pretty accent.
Well, can I just say, Tina, I've always been rather partial to the Belgian accent myself.
So. I haven't, but that's probably because it's me.
Oh, shush. Take a compliment.
Thank you.
But, you know, I think Shada is, they've done a great job with it. It's fast and it's funny. I mean, people used to always say six-parters in TV were too long. But I think if you do this one episode at a time, it's really good fun. And I just had a really good laugh listening along to it again, just to prepare for today.
Me too.
And had you heard it before?
I heard it once, but by hearing everything from Paul McGann in chronological order.
Yeah.
So I had heard it once before, but it was really fun to listen to it again.
Yeah, I think it's great fun. And there's just, I don't listen to it that often because I like it. Because I know it's not the greatest story in the world, but it's fun. And it's a good one to put on if you want something silly to listen to, because it's ridiculous. Yeah. And it's got K-9 as well.
I agree. Oh, yeah, I love K-9. I love Romana as well.
Oh, Lala Ward was one of my first ever crushes. I love Lala Ward.
Yeah, I get that. She's fit.
And she likes to take control.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say too much, but yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's just continue and let's hear how this version of Shada came to be with Gary Russell, who was a producer of the production.
My name is Gary Russell, and I was involved peripherally in the Big Finish version of Shada, in as much as, although I didn't want to credit for it, I wrote the script. So I took all of Douglas Adams's various versions of the script, and then I adapted it for audio, and then obviously wrote all the stuff at the beginning with Paul and Lala, making it sort of, what went wrong? We vaguely remember Shada with Tom. Oh no, well, we've got to relive it and do it all again. So that was my contribution. I didn't want to direct it, so I immediately said it should be Nick Pegg, because I knew Nick would get a cast that would reflect how important Shada was. It's also, you know, I don't like Shada. I think it's a pretty dismal story from the worst season of Doctor Who in the entire history of Doctor Who. So it wasn't, you know, I knew that I wouldn't have the right flair for it. I wouldn't have the right, I wouldn't create the right atmosphere for it. So yes, it went to Nick Pegg. And I don't think I took a producer credit on it. I mean, I did produce it, but again, I just thought, no, this needs to be everyone else's moment of in the sunshine. So I don't think my name appears on it anywhere. And it was just a case, you know, BBC, I wanted to do this. We'd had a lot of success with Real Time, so they wanted to do another one. I wanted to do Real Time too, obviously, because, you know, Mr. Ego here. But they wanted to do Shada. They got the rights to Shada. I don't quite know how, but they had. Andrew Pixley supplied me with three or four different drafts of Shada script-wise. I was able to pick and choose and put some scenes in and suggest some lines of dialogue. I tried to make sure that other than the necessity sometimes of having to have exposition to cover visuals, I didn't change any of Douglas Adams' work lines. I didn't try and write Douglas Adams' lines, because believe me, there's one thing I can't do in life, it's write like Douglas Adams. So everything was kind of, I tried to use his words and his dialogue from whatever versions of Shada I had available. So the only times that would have changed, say, is the first sort of 5 to 6 minutes. And if we suddenly had to do something that was so totally visual in the original that it needed a couple of, what's going on, Doctor? Oh, I don't know, Romana. Maybe this is happening. Just to cover the transition from visuals to audio. And then I handed the whole kit and caboodle over to Nick Pegg. And he and Jason took it up to Bristol and recorded it over, I think, 4 days. Because it was a big, big project. They put a lot of money into it, both Big Finish and BBCI, far more than had gone into real time, for obvious reasons. They really, this is their big thing for the 50th anniversary. So there was a big oomph to it all, really. And that was the end of my thing. And then all I did after that was, again, Jason had negotiated a CD version. And so all I did was see the CD version to the pressing plant and boom, off you go, and get a cover done for it, which I think was Lee Binding, but I'm not totally sure. It might have been Clay. But that was it, really. That was my involvement with Shada.
Nice. But I think the opening scene's quite nice. We get that. That's a great dialogue between Paul and Lala.
Yes. Yeah, I was quite proud of that, actually. Nobody else liked it, but I was quite proud of it.
Of course, if you have the Steelbook Blu-ray version of Shada, do you have that one?
I do not.
You need to have that one. If I see it in a shop here, I will pick it up for you and send it over. But yeah, if you have the Steelbook, you can watch the animated version on your TV and on your Blu-ray player, as I've done so in the past. So more McGann on your TV is never a bad thing. And to put it exactly, it was originally made available in weekly episodes that you could watch through Flash Player on the BBC website, which I did, even though it took forever to load. But yes, it was great fun. And we're able to watch it thanks to the wonderful art of Lee Sullivan. And you can, of course, see that on the Blu-ray. And here to tell us all about it is Lee himself.
My name is Lee Sullivan, and I did some illustrations for Shada, which was one of the many versions of Shada. It was done by, I think it was the BBC and Big Finish, I think, combined possibly, but it was a webcast. Look it up, kids, because nobody knows what those things are now. But it was basically a streamed animated adventure based on the Douglas Adams story, and but adapted so that Paul McGann could be the Doctor and Lala Ward returned as Romana. And it was, so the whole adventure was recorded and adapted. And it, I think Simon Pegg, no, that's not, I've got the name wrong.
Nick
Pegg. God, there you go, I see. That's, I got half right. You know, half right. The other guy's Scotty, isn't he? Anyway, so he was lovely actually, because he invited me down to, yes, so that's what it was. That's what it was. And I refuse to take any blame for it.
So I suppose it must be one of the more unusual commissions you've had over the years for something that's going to be going out like that.
Well, the webcasts were kind of a very strange little entity. It was before full-scale animations of Doctor Who things started, and it began with a thing called Death Comes to Time, which was written by Dan Freeman, or Dan Friedman, depending on which spelling he was using at any one time. He was at one stage the producer of Doctor Who. It was a very strange moment. It was a while after the TV movie, I think, and he managed to just generate this webcast, and basically it was going to be an audio drama for the BBC, because he was, I think, doing a producer's course at the BBC at the time. And he wrote the first part of something called Death Comes Time, which is where, amongst other things, the Doctor dies. So he had a very particular handle on how to do Doctor Who. Get rid of the lead character. But the BBC decided that it would be a good thing. They could fund it if they made it more than just an audio adventure. And I think that they decided to do a very, very basic animation. James Goss, who is a Doctor Who writer of note these days, was also, I think, a producer there. And he arranged the animation. And I worked for James, particularly, on supplying a host of illustrations, still illustrations of backgrounds and various elements that we could be put in the midground and foreground, including, of course, the characters. And then James put it together in different kinds of animation techniques. I think those changed over the three we did. And that led to another one, which was called Real Time. I think it's in this sequence. And then that led to doing Sharda. And Sharda was kind of like the nearest they got to producing a proper animated Doctor Who before they did Scream with the Shulker, which was the next one. And I didn't work on that one. But that starred Richard E. Grant as the Doctor. So it kind of falls somewhere in a sort of strange hinterland of Doctor Who animation, sort of before animation really started to happen. It was a really weird experience, actually, because the end result was a very small, because in these days people's bandwidth was next to nothing. This is, we're talking, you know, I guess 20, maybe more than that, 20 something years ago. And you've got something the size of a postcard on the middle of your computer screen with some very basic animation going on. Very cleverly done by James, but the image quality wasn't all that high, and it was always stopping and starting, because if I don't know if it was still on dial-up back in those days, but it wasn't far off it. And so the actual amount of information you could download, it just kept going into sort of like a little circle would go around, and you'd have to sit and wait for another 10 minutes for the episode to continue. So strange thing. Kids today, you don't know you're born.
I absolutely agree. It's funny when you say that. I always think that wait for just like, oh, come on, just hurry up, will you? Because I think it was streamed in 5-minute chunks, something like that, as I recall. So I could be wrong, but I'm sure that was the way that they did it.
Yeah.
I suppose with Sharda having a pre-existing format with some of the stuff that was made for TV, you, of course, went completely opposite way. Was that in the brief to do your own thing and just reimagine it completely rather than be held slave to what had been done previously?
Well, I think it was a mixture of both, really, because there was a lot of... I'd seen the video that John Nathan Turner had put together of the elements of Sharda that survived, and then they did some animated... Not animated, but they did some special effects. The little floating ball was applied to some of the footage that existed. I'm not sure what they did. I think they did probably a linking narrative back in those days on the video. This is on a VHS video. So there was some of that to work from, but of course the rest of the cast had changed. So Andrew Sachs was the lead villain. And he had a totally different approach to it. And of course, the whole thing was slightly different. The whole tone of it was different because Paul McGann was the Doctor instead of Tom Baker. And although Lala Ward was in it, she was playing an older version, I think, of herself, because she was on Gallifrey. And there was a lot of stuff going on Gallifrey, because getting the Doctor and her together, there was certainly an element of Gallifrey, because I had to do some interior shots of Gallifrey, and I chose to use some when I was first starting to use a mixture of hand-drawn line art and Photoshop colouring in the early days of my working on Photoshop, and I put sort of cogs and as if it was inside a jeweler's watch, that kind of stuff, and then looking out through the bubble of Gallifrey's city limits. So there was some of that, but there was no, yeah, there was quite a lot different really about the storyline was slightly changed. And I think that because it really everyone wants you to get on with doing it, so unless you do something outrageous, they will go with what you come up with. And I think we came up with something that's suitable. And in a way, I think it was right to not make it exactly like Sharda, the TV show, because a lot of the special effects stuff actually hadn't been done anyway. So you could kind of do what you liked, really. I don't think I deliberately avoided the extremely camp costume that the lead character is. I can't remember his name.
Skagra,
that's like, yeah, he was, so they didn't have the kind of, I just always loved that. I thought the TV thing was brilliant. I mean, you can't imagine them getting away with it now, but it was a very camp costume, and so I reduced that to much less camp. And Andrew had had a much more silky kind of approach to the villainry anyway. I have a lovely story about him, actually. I was invited to go down to the recording of it, which was in Bristol. And I just thought, okay, I'm up for that, because that'd be great. And the cast and I stayed in a hotel nearby. And in the evening, sort of, you know, I think Lala was there, and I don't think Paul was, but Andrew was. Andrew Saxon, he was, for those who are not familiar with this, he played Manuel in Fawlty Towers, which is about one of the most famous comedies ever, and if you haven't seen it, you should. A series of, I think, 12 utterly perfect farces featuring John Cleese, and who also wrote it with Connie Booth. But so he was a waiter in that, Spanish waiter, and from Barcelona. And we stood in a queue for some food at the buffet in the hotel, and he just started waiting on me. It was the most strange, but not as Manuel, which would have really blown my head off, but as this very suave and sophisticated waiter said, "Would you care for some mushrooms? Would sir like this?" But he was just lovely, really, really nice man. A nice memory that was.
Yeah, it must have been good fun for you also to be able to like redesign the Krags, and the fact that they were meant to be like living lava and rocks in the TV version, but we didn't quite get that. But then you were able to go the whole hog.
Yes, I think again because there wasn't really very much to go on, so I was just able to indulge myself. And I think I was also thinking about the rock monster in Star Trek V and how that hadn't worked out either. So I kind of did my version of that as well. But yeah, that was nice. I think it was easy because you could just do those black figures with little cracks of molten interior. And then added to that all the audio, of course, which is, I mean, my illustrations were just supplementing the thing, really. The audio was full of screechy, scratchy arguing going on, of which I have to say I am one. It gave me the opportunity to actually be recorded going, "Arr!" which I felt is about the limit of my acting ability. I reached my zenith on that one production, that was it.
Brilliant. So I suppose, can maybe tell us a wee bit about how it worked? Because I'd imagine that you built up sort of like, you'd have like a main body and head, but there'd be sort of bits you could supplement it with, like different arms and hands and things like that, almost like an action figure.
Yeah, I think that's right. As I said, the animation was very limited, and poor James was having to do it all on his own. And I think he was, from what I remember, he was doing it on a laptop in the evenings, because he was working at the Bee during the day. And probably he was working on it there. But I know he worked like a maniac on it. He is not given enough praise for what he did. I mean, the constraints of animation then were quite difficult. I think the last one was done in something called Flash, which has now been, again, abandoned by its owners and creators. It's because of the crazy world we live in. But, and that was slightly different. That made the images look less like my drawings, but it made them slightly more abstract. So I think Sharda was had this very... The previous webcasts had a slightly pixelated version of my line drawings, and the Flash version kind of turned them into bends. All the line work went slightly bendy and rather odd. I quite liked it, actually. It was, I would have done more with it if I'd known that's how it was going to work out. But it worked much better. He was able to do much more with it. But yeah, you had to supply... I suppose it's the same in any animation. You have to supply a series of still shots of people, but which have to be adaptable to having extra arms and legs pinned on them, a bit like pin the tail on the donkey, you know. You can see in the animations that are done now, the recreations of the old episodes, it's very hard to do arms which don't kind of either get too long or too short or bend in the wrong place, and they always look very awkward. I think arms must be one of the hardest things to do in. So what I would do is I would supply two or three versions of the arms which would look right pinned onto the main body, main torso, say, of the Doctor. Make some arms that look right in several positions, but that would marry onto the... It's quite hard because when people start to turn to move their arms, the whole of the jacket and shoulder will move with it. So you never really get a very happy result unless you get very, you know, you'd need, now I suppose you'd have AI working on it to blend them, to shape from one thing to another, but then it was just real hit and miss stuff. But because the Flash animation was a bit weird at looking anyway, it didn't really matter so much. But yeah, I mean, well, we would also do things like, I would supply several different hand positions. Yeah, and they might be used in long shot or medium shot or close shot. The trouble is that the line weight that I was using, because these were black and white line colored up in Photoshop, the line weight at one size, if you shrink a hand that you've drawn down, in theory at A4, if you shrink it down to the size of a postage stamp, the line weight will be very faint. It'll be very spidery. You need to beef it up. And conversely, going the other way, if you boost it up to A3 from A4, then it will look the line weight will look really thick. So there, I think we had to sort of, you know, there were an awful lot of dodges that James had to do to make it look good. And I haven't seen it for so long now that I can't really remember whether it was successful or not. I think I quite liked it. But mostly what I liked was the fact that you got, you know, a proper Doctor Who story and the proper theme music and all that stuff going on, and your name in the credits, which is, of course, hugely ego-boosting and made it all worthwhile.
Do you have any particular favourite things that you created for it that spring to mind?
Well, I think that the thing I mentioned earlier, Gallifrey, was very successful. It was certainly very successful as I drew it. I'm not sure how it translated, because all the fine work that I'd done in it, I think because I didn't know when I was working on it that what Flash would do to it. You know, sometimes things, when you don't know what's going to happen, it turns out to be a happy accident. If you get serendipity, it'll work out fine. Some things look worse, and you kind of think, oh, I wish I'd known, I'd have done something different. But it was all done in, as usual, a hell of a rush. Nobody had time to do anything really on it. I had to supply, I think, more drawings for less money. And it's always the same, you know, that every time you go back to something, instead of giving you... Death Comes to Time had a really good budget on it, and I did lots and lots and lots of drawings for it. And then Real Time came along, which was a story by Big Finish, and I think Gary Russell was in charge of that, but the budget for doing the illustrations was smaller, and then I think it was again on Sharda, so it was a law of diminishing returns. And then eventually they did Scream with a Shulker, and I was not invited. I think I spoke to James about it, and he said, we won't be going with you because we now have to move into proper animation territory. And I wasn't considered to be... I completely understand why, because much better to use people who know what they're doing. I was not an animator, and I wasn't... I knew what I had to do, but I think that you need to have people who have got a lot of time and B, a lot of knowledge about how things will work in animation to work on those things. And I although I was a bit annoyed that it went off and went to proper professionals in that field, in the end it was probably a good idea. I'm not bitter about it.
Oh, well, of course, Shadow, your version was given a release on the Blu-ray steelbook with the Tom Baker version.
Yeah, I was amazed at that. And I have to confess, it was my intention to take a look at that before we talked about this. But the week has just been a week of mad Doctor Whoing in other directions, which we'll get to. And so I just didn't have a chance. I'll probably go and look at it afterwards. What use is that? But no, I was very pleased that it came out, because I think various releases of Shada happened, the version that we did, but I'm not entirely sure the full animation was on those, but I believe it was on the steelbook, as you say. And it remains the only steelbook I've got. I had to go and buy it, of course, but because, like, you know, no one's going to give you a free copy.
Why would they do that, Lee? Why on earth would they do that? But no, it's been brilliant. It's absolutely, it does look great. I've watched it recently, and it's I quite like having it on in the background. So it's nice to have just proper Paul McGann on the telly, playing away as it were.
Yeah. That's interesting. I will go back to it now with renewed enthusiasm. In that case, if you like it, it was really good to work on something that was being. You rarely get the chance to work on something which, I mean, because Nick gave me the opportunity to come in and watch the recording, that was fantastic, because I actually got to see for the first time ever something, well, in Doctor Who at least, the actors actually doing the thing, which I know, you know, there are lots of writers who are very happy because they've seen their work come to life on Big Finish and all the rest of it. But I never thought I'd get the opportunity to actually see the makings of that side of it. It was great. I think that we were in the same studio as the big... There was some really big group in Bristol at the time, and they had great dance music.
Massive Attack.
Massive Attack, that's the ones. Those are the Johnnies, yes. They were in the next door studio, I think, doing that kind of stuff as well. So that was quite interesting. I didn't get to meet them, but I was near them.
Well, that's good. It's meeting by osmosis of some sort, anyway. But no, Lee, thank you so much for your time. It's been great chatting about Shada.
My pleasure.
So, Kenny, you're someone with a pretty extensive contact list when it comes to Doctor Who people.
That's true.
And I know you actually got one of your good friends on next, who was involved in the Big Finish version.
That's absolutely correct, Tina. We're going to hear in a wee minute from Russell Stone, who is a very, very good friend of mine. We first met through Big Finish, just chatting. I did an interview with him for my fan magazine many, many years ago, and we got on very well. Russell was actually up in Glasgow not long after we were in touch, and so we met up, him and his then girlfriend Mange, and Mange is now his wife, and they have two fantastic children, and he's just really funny, really talented, and sadly he's not done music for Big Finish for a long time because he's brilliant, but yeah, he's brilliant. I love him to bits. Sorry, Russell, that is going to embarrass you, but yeah. And Russell did the music for Shada, and we were actually just having a normal catch-up, as we often do, and I mentioned to him that we're doing this episode, and I thought, actually, while I've got you on the Zoom, let's have a quick chat, and therefore we have a bonus interview. But however, it's not just the two of us who are doing this right now. Tina, who's joined us?
My cat, Sirius. He has decided to come and sit on my lap while we record this. So if you hear purring, that's why.
I thought it was going to be you enjoying my company so much.
Sirius was like, no, I want to be in here as well.
Okay. Sirius, listen to Russell.
Yes, let's listen to Russell.
Hello, my name's Russell Stone, and I wrote the music for Sharda.
This must have been quite a prestigious one for you, Russell, getting to work in a Douglas Adams script.
It was a prestigious one, and I remember feeling nervous about it, as I felt nervous doing all the Doctor Who's, to be honest, but this one was particularly special. I think Douglas Adams died a long time before, hadn't he? Yeah, he was dead. So I kind of felt a sense of responsibility, obviously, but then at the end of the day, you just have to get on with it and do your best and hope it comes out right the other end, which I like to think it did. I'm not sure if it was remembered with any great fondness as a score, but and I think the actual production has been eclipsed a lot, hasn't it, by other versions of Sharda that have come out since.
I suppose it's one of those ones when you got the commission, you must have been thinking, wow, that's something a bit prestigious, the fact that it's going to go on to be sort of transmitted, in inverted commas, by the BBC rather than just straight to CD with Big Finish themselves.
Yeah, I suppose it's hard to get, you couldn't really get a sense of what might happen as a result of it. I mean, like I say, you just have to get on with the job in hand, because it does become a question of getting through it. You know, as much as you might enjoy it and have the occasional moment of awe and reverence, you think, well, I've still got to do a job on this, you know, and to the best of my ability. So, yeah, so all the kind of the glamour of it fades after a while, and it becomes something you want to do the best you can on to do justice to everybody, and then just hope that everybody enjoys what you did as much as you enjoyed doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I still can. I can hear the like the opening music, da da, da 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 da, when it's the opening sort of on Gallifrey, and it's great. Just that those little themes that are in there that you worked in, and
it's... Thank you. Yes, I remember that bringing that theme back later. I think when they discover Chronotis's study is a TARDIS, I think, and then all the controls start appearing and the shutters come down, and I put that theme, that Gallifrey theme, back in there to suggest that there was something of Gallifrey about that room.
Yeah.
I can see, I was actually prompted to do a City of Death reprisal at the opening. I think you were McGann's talking about the old days and about collecting the key to time and defacing Leonardo's work of art. So I remember throwing in a bit there as a tribute to Dudley Simpson. Whether it came up or not, you'd be the judge of that. I don't know.
I think it did. I could see it or hear it, I should say. Obviously, I can't see music because I can't really read it. I can read a few basic notes, not anywhere near your level and stuff. So any particular memories, other memories of the score? Because I think it's one that's quite, I think it's very alive. It feels organic and fluid when I listen back to it.
Can't say anything specific apart from I wanted to have a flavour of Paddy Kingsland in there, because I always associate him with Douglas Adams because of his work on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So that was definitely my intention, to have that flavour in there. But then it wouldn't have taken much, because most of my scores I tried to sound like Paddy Kingsland, with a bit of Peter Howell and a bit of Roger Lim, and to keep in tune with the period in which these stories were set. But also, you know, because I adore Paddy Kingsland's music, and he's just got that kind of sweetness and poignancy to some of his melodies, which I wanted to try and inject into Sharda as well. And I think the influence was certainly recognisable, because this email I've got here from James Goss mentions about tickling Paddy Kingsland, quoting Deadly Dudley, tickling Paddy Kingsland and just having fun generally. So, we even reached the one point, it says here. That's nice.
that's quite a nice note to have when your BBC producer's giving you that. So, yeah.
Yeah, but it also put me in good stead for what came later, which was Scream of the Shalka, because I think James Goss was involved heavily in that as well. So, I think they possibly mentioned me at some point to somebody, and which is how I came to write the music for that. So yes, yeah, so that did that led on to something good for me as well.
Yeah, I have to say, as soon as you say Scream with a Shalka, I'm just hearing Jerry Halliwell singing Scream if you want to go Shalka, baby. But,
of course you would.
You know me far too well, Russell. But no, Russell, that was lovely. Thanks very much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thanks to Gary Lee and Russell for chatting with us today. So remember, if you enjoyed today's Pieces of Eight, or indeed liked any episode we've done, please do leave a review for us on iTunes or your podcast provider, as it means more people can find our episodes, and it's always appreciated. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter, Pieces of Eight.
Absolutely, and we also have a new Facebook group too, so feel free to send us a request to join it, and you can find out what we've got coming up, as well as some general chit-chat. Tina, how has it been for you today? Have you enjoyed yourself?
I have. It was fun. I was nervous, but this was fun.
It was. I told you it'd be fun.
Yes, you did.
I don't bite much. And yes,
not much.
Not too much. So yeah, just, well, you're being protected by Sirius now, so I can't get any closer, yeah. So stopped. We'll be back next time with another episode next week, and we'll be taking a look, or rather a listen, to the Dolby Spook, as we find out more about Jeff the Talking Mongoose. And I'll be back with David Steele at my side. Tina, will you come back later in the series and join us again?
I will.
Yes, get in.
Yes.
So, until then, I've been Kenny Smith.
And I was Tina Peters.
Bye.
Bye.
That was...